Since today's subject is Savitri, that's how we have decided, and I am so grateful for it. It's heartbeat and breath. So I have been asked to read a passage and then we'll slip into the subject very naturally. So first, reading a passage. And this passage which I'm going to read is a description of Savitri itself in a way. And as we know, Savitri has been given to us in extremely turbulent times. It's like an age is ending and a new age is beginning, and Savitri is the word to help us navigate through these times that we are in and we have been going through. So this book, it was published first time in 1950, one part, and second part in 1951. So next year we are going to have 75 years of birth of Savitri. And we know 1950, it's the time when the Second World War has just ended and its fumes are still all over the earth. And it's the time when India gets freedom amidst famine and many issues, division, all this. That's a time we can't even imagine. So at that point of time, Sri Aurobindo is giving us Savitri. Why is giving us Savitri? Savitri is the sun. Savitri is the sun, which is the sun which is hidden in the darkness as it is emerging. That's what Savitri is. It is that sun which is emerging out of the darkness. The first sun. You feel it, you sense it. That's morning, even as it emerges. So that's Savitri. And during this time, Sri Aurobindo had entered into the deepest layers, densest darkness. What is there in this darkness? What is hiding in it? What is behind this mask of terror and evil and suffering and pain? And he brought out that truth, secret truth, cowled in darkness, death. And he gives it to us. And this gift is Savitri. And I'll just read a passage before I speak of the description. And it comes, interestingly, at the end of book 2, canto 8, which is the world of falsehood. So he has literally entered into it. And if we read the description, all that we talk about today will appear as nothing. All this has been foreseen, presaged. It's not that Sri Aurobindo is unaware of what's happening. He's aware. And therefore he is gifting us Savitri to carry us through this journey. So what has he discovered and what really Savitri is? This is page 231. He saw in night the Eternal's shadowy veil, knew death for a seller of the house of life. In destruction saw creation's hasty pace, and hell as a shortcut to heaven's gates. This is the discovery he is giving us. Hell as a shortcut to heaven's gates. Then in illusion's occult factory, much of what we see today is the asuric maya. It creates an illusion. Such an illusion that we don't know what is divine and what is undivine. So then in illusion's occult factory and in the inconscient's magic printing house, toned were the formats of the primal night and shattered the stereotypes of ignorance. Falsehood gave back to truth her tortured shape. And now comes the description, which I said is, if one is to describe what Savitri is as a book, here it is. This skillful penman's unseen finger wrote, his swift intuitive calligraphy, earth's forms were made his divine documents. The wisdom embodied mind could not reveal. In conscience chased from the world's voiceless breast, transfigured with the fixed schemes of reasoning thought, and then the action of Savitri, arousing consciousness in things inert, he imposed upon dark atom and dumb mass the diamond script of the imperishable, inscribed on the dim heart of fallen things, a pain song of the free, infinite. And the name, with a capital N, and the name, foundation of eternity, and traced on the awake, exultant cells in the ideographs of the ineffable, the lyric of the love that waits through time. The divine love, the mother's love that waits for all of us. The lyric of the love that waits through time. And the mystic volume of the book of bliss. And the message of the superconscient fire. So with this we can enter into Savitri. So we know that Sri Aurobindo's yoga is a yoga of world transformation, and what is meant by that is that at this point of time the world is far from the divine origin, so far, so distorted that when we look at things on the surface we almost feel compelled to believe that there is no God, no divine, because if there is a divine, this is not how it should be. And if there is God, then perhaps he has nothing to do with the world. He is far above in his silence. And we have a choice to enter into that silence, unweave the stars and into the silence pass. But Sri Aurobindo brings up here that no, this world is meant to manifest the divine. But there is the veil of ignorance through which he manifests. And Savitri reveals everything, why this veil of ignorance was necessary. It's much like a seed which is sown in darkness bed, must be fed on all the dirt and waste of creation. Otherwise, if it's suddenly thrown into the light, it'll burn away. So there is a veil of darkness, and this veil distorts, much like you have a mirror which deflects and distorts the light, obscures the light, holds it back. So what you see here is not what that light in its origin. So will it be forever thus? He says no, it's not meant to be forever thus. This world is meant to manifest the divine in all his glory and splendor and light and love and beauty and bliss and harmony and truth. And it will be so. And the hour has come now. This is what is the background. Why did he say it? Because he experienced it. During 1910, when he came to Pondicherry after his grand first glimpse of the supermind, Vasudevam Sarvamiti. So he started experiencing something which so far had not been experienced in the mystic experience and realizations, including the Vedas. He started experiencing the descent of the greater consciousness more and more into himself. And he saw that this descent is so powerful, it can transform mind, life, body, individually. He was experiencing it all in his body. But then he made a choice, no, not me alone. It must transform this earth. But at the same time he realized that the tapasya that is required is arduous. Even if he were to say everything, how to do it, man cannot do it. Still he tried to give it to us in whatever way. If you see the synthesis of yoga, is somewhat for us what he has himself gone through in records of yoga. But if you look at it, such a wonderful book and everything. But as we go through the chapters, for man to engage in this tapasya is extremely difficult. Still he wanted to give it so that at least the mind of race is ready for what is going to come. And to whatever extent we can walk with faltering steps. But the effort was to make the yoga easy. So there came the mother. So then if we see 27 onwards, Sri Aurobindo's writings, he says open to the mother, become receptive to the mother. Everything is now centered around mother. Mother will make it easy for you. Mother will do the yoga for you. Surrender to the mother. This is the secret of yoga. Remain psychically open to the mother. This is the key of the yoga. Everything, that entire yoga is as if transferred to the mother. She does the yoga for us and we have to open to her. But then all are not so fortunate, so blessed to open like this. Man has something, there is a dim disturbing somewhat in man. It questions, it doubts, it resists. And this resistance is very deep, but we are not going into that. Even when Sri Aurobindo is physically there, there are people who don't believe in the mother, who say she is a foreigner lady. God has to be only and only in India. How can a French woman, they know she is someone too great, and yet they can't understand her precisely because she is too great and yet chooses to be among all of us. She plays tennis, she distributes chocolates, she plays games. But when we know about her achievements, occult, yogic, they are 12 bodies, 12 layers of consciousness. We talk about 7 planes on the Kundalini, 7-fold, she speaks about 12. All this she has experienced, so they just can't understand because we want fixed formats. So Sri Aurobindo wanted something still through which those who connect with the mother directly, it's so wonderful, they too can connect. So therefore, he gave us Savitri. If we see, this is how Sri Aurobindo has worked. In India, he installed Bande Mataram and Durga, guardian deity of India, the Divine Mother's power. For the yoga, the Divine Mother herself. And for the world at large, they need a scripture. Not everybody has the greatest of grace and the advantage of, for instance, those who turn to Krishna directly, they know, because Krishna will reveal to them the Gita and many more Gitas. But many cannot, so they need a scripture to navigate through these difficult times, and that gift is Savitri. It is the word and sound body of Sri Aurobindo, and it sings the glory of the Divine Mother. So it's very unique in the sense it contains both Sri Aurobindo and the mother's consciousness. And it is a mantra. So what does the mantra do? Mantra brings the deity close. Mantra is a sound symbol. Through this sound symbol, one draws the deity close. So this is a mantra, and this mantra draws the Divine Mother with a trance, because its purpose is transformation, the mantra of transformation, with a transforming power close to us, and that power is love. The transforming power is love, and therefore this book is the lyric of love that waits through time. It is the mother's love, the divine love. At one place mother says, "My child, I am millions of years old and I am waiting." So it's the lyric of that love. So wonderful. Love is there. It should change us. We all want love. Do we? There is Messrs. Death and Company waiting around the corner. It doubts. It doesn't believe. One of the tragedies of today's times is that we have stopped believing in love, or we have turned it into absolutely something which name is there, but everything it's opposite. So there is pitted against love, who else but death? strangely, not life. Life is a process. Death is a process of life. They are not opponents of each other. So how is death an opponent to love? What is the power of love? Love is in creation to unite creation to its origin. That's what love is. Love is the power that unites, even at a human level. Love seeks union with the one you love. It's a very natural movement. Love weaves the star, as we see in Dante's famous, wonderful book, when he asks Beatrice, why did you come to save me? And she says, for the sake of love, love that weaves the stars. If you look at the harmony and beauty and all this in material creation, that power of love, which is everywhere, it's lifting creation up towards the divine. That's why man can hope and aspire, feel joy, even though in the clutch of death, because there is love. So what is death? Death divides, opposes, denies. It says no. It first of all cuts away the continuity of the thread of life. Yogis tell us that rebirth is, in a way of putting it, we can equally say that it is the stream of life running continuously. And it passes through a dark phase and then re-emerges again. But just like when you go through a tunnel, you don't remember what really happened because all is dark. All that you know is you have come out of a tunnel. So something like that, there is a continuous stream of life. We say death, we call as rebirth, but there is a continuous stream which passes through a phase, just like in sleep, we sleep. Not that death is identical to sleep, but then we sleep and we wake up. We have forgotten all that happened during sleep. So death is, there is a stream of life. But death creates the impression that there is now no such continuity. It also creates that impression that there is nothing like the divine, because it's the origin of ignorance, falsehood. So it's like a dark something, dark iron wall that stands between us and God. So we believe, many people believe. But belief is one thing, realizing another. There is this screen, it doesn't allow you. Go inside, try it. And if you leave aside the feel-good factor, it's like an iron wall, doesn't let you go inside. And then it takes various forms. It says there is no God, denial, simplest of forms. Then it throws doubts. Maybe there is God, but this is what you say. Man is God. See, we can create AI. Why are you worshipping God here and there? Throws doubts. It imitates the God it denies. So it tries many ways to fill man's heart with despair, depression, doubt, denial. All these four D's stand against the one single D, divine. And yet, the strange part is that men still hope, they still labor, something in us survives. So there is the debate, the love on one side, and there is death on the other side. This death of the physical body is only one action of death. But death is something that divides us from our own origin, from the divine. So that's why we can't know divine automatically. We have to do a lot of labor. And Shubhinda says it should not be so. So this is the basic theme of the book, Savitri. She is embodiment of love. And death, of course, is death. And this story is relevant for all times because its very birth is like that. So Yudhishthir and the Pandava brothers and Draupadi, they are going through, they have lost the game of dice and they are going into the forest. And Yudhishthir is filled with state of misery and self-blame, doubt, guilt, that we, you know, especially because he's a good guy, he's sattvic, and he has done something which he should have never done. And he feels responsible for all the trouble that Draupadi has to go through, like all sattvic people. It's not his own misery, but the misery of somebody he loves and cares for. And so he meets Markandeya Rishi, who is himself an immortal, and asks him, has anyone ever suffered like this lady by my side, Draupadi? And Rishi Markandeya, himself an immortal, he says, yes. But she took the challenge of fate and conquered it. So you are challenged by fate, you can conquer it. How? So he narrates the story of Savitri. Savitri loves, we know that she is born to King Ashwapati, who is a yogi, and he does a yajna to have a child because he looks around and sees the misery of this world and he wants a child who can, doesn't matter, boy or girl, but he wants a child who can take care of this kingdom, which is the larger kingdom, bring here light. And he does a yajna, and I'm not going into putra kamesti yajna and all this, you know, ritualistic aspect. So as a result of the yajna, the sun god is pleased and he says, okay, a portion of me will come, my own daughter, my own ray will come, and she is born as Savitri to Ashwapati. She grows up and comes of age. And as was the custom those days, she has to go and find her suitor. See how advanced India has been. The woman chooses Swayamvar. It's literally called Swayamvar. So Swayamvar are of two types. One is that you kings would call, like, you know, Rama, and everybody comes and decides. And there's a test there, whether you deserve or not. So other is you choose. So she goes and she sees, after traveling, meeting sages, saints, heroes, prince, she has got an inner eye. There is something in us which knows. So that's how Savitri describes that it can recognize beyond the form. So she finds Satyavan and she says, here is the person. She decides. And she comes back, tells the father, I have chosen, it is done. So as it happens, Narad the sage, who mediates between earth and the heavens, and his task is to precipitate crisis, which is going to take place much later, but he precipitates it. He's a catalyst, a heavenly messenger. Why? Because he was human, he has become divine. So he's the man divine, described as demigod. That's how humans who become divine and dwell in the higher spheres, like our Amritdha. He says, I want to be always in the earth atmosphere to help people. So in Champaklalji, so they are man divine. They continue to help. So Narad comes and it is chance, but it's not a chance. And when Savitri discloses, a very beautiful, everything in Savitri is so beautiful, and I have to really resist the temptation. Probably it's when we have a camp on Savitri, we'll dwell into it in depth. So they naturally ask him, please bless the child. So he looks at her. And he says, everything is God's will, all is good, don't worry. So the child's mother notes the dubious clause that something is holding back. So he tells you, please tell, even if it is evil, worse fate, it's better to know now. So finally, after much hem and haw, he says, well, the boy she has chosen is a jewel upon earth. And there's a beautiful description of Satyavan there. The rarest of rare. But lo and behold, if doom could spare, this day returning Satyavan must die. So like any physical mother, she says, thank God I know it. Savitri, go back. Find someone else. Or if you want, we'll give an advertisement. We'll find somebody. This is cancelled. This is not. I can't accept this. And Savitri, she is born with a mission. And she's not a fickle-minded person. She is made of solid strength of gold. So she says, diamond rather. She is of that stuff. That's what we see in ancient scripture. When you read about Rama, Arjun, what to keep a promise? You know, Ram was never asked by Dasharatha to go. Many people don't know. He just came to know that my father had made a promise. And hence my stepmother is unhappy. And despite everybody telling him, he says, no. That's how the Ikshvaku Suryavanshi clan stands for. I prefer to take all the dangers and die. Rather than, you know, my father made a promise. And I don't want to be a coward and be a calculating person. And Sita walks with him. So this was the type in that age. So Savitri says, mother, Once my heart has chosen, it chooses not again. If this is what fate has given me, I will see what to do with it. And I'll take the challenge of fate. Now, this is something very interesting because Savitri is a direct contradiction to those people who believe Indian thought is all about fatalism, fatalistic. Whatever are the karmas we are going to, you know. No, fate can be changed. Of course, it cannot be changed by wishful thinking. So how fate can be changed? She takes the challenge and she... Then there is a very beautiful dialogue between Savitri's mother and Narad. Why she is choosing? She knows. Still, look at my daughter. This is the teenage problem, all this, she says. And Narad describes... She is born with a mission, describes all the sides of fate. Nowhere, I can say this with having read everything possible under the sun on all these subjects, nowhere one finds such a complete understanding of fate, its deeper sense, than one finds here. There are several sub-themes in Savitri. So she has a challenge of death. Now she gets married. But now the challenge is there. She says, I must change it. I love him. Love is something beautiful. It must not meet this end. So she now engages in yoga. And as a result of this yoga, she is armed to take the challenge of death. Death comes. Takes Satyavan. Because it's destined. And Savitri follows. All these are very interesting questions. Why didn't Savitri do a magic? Death takes Satyavan. And she chases. And she goes and there is a dialogue which takes place as the story goes in Mahabharata. And eventually death ends up being convinced because of Savitri's wisdom. She almost tricks him into a boon. That number of progenies. She says, I want what Satyavan would have wanted. Very smartly. And this Yobindu brings out in Savitri also. He says, ask anything but don't ask Satyavan. So she says, okay, I want whatever Satyavan would have wanted. So what did Satyavan want? Among other things, his father is blind, he had lost his kingdom, the kingdom, and Satyavan wanted children. So he says, okay, I grant father vision, I grant the kingdom, and I grant hundreds of children. He says, because you know, she has asked whatever Satyavan wanted. He says, now you see, you are asking me to do adharma. You are telling me that I will have 100 children. Your boon cannot go waste. And how am I going to have children without Satyavan? So this is how the argument runs. She says, I understand you are wise. And then she reminds him something very interesting. That you have to obey dharma. You cannot do adharma. Even if you have all the powers, you cannot do adharma. So you understand that dharma is binding on everyone. So he finally releases Satyavan. The story ends there, and according to the Brahma Vaivarta Puran and others, Satyavan lived on for 400 years after that. This story is common. Now, Shivinda uses the same story, and he says this story is so symbolic. Savitri, daughter of the sun, she embodies that power, sun as the creator. So she is none else but the creator coming upon earth. With this power of love, embodying this power of love. So it's the story of the Divine Mother as an avatar. This one part of Savitri. Who is Satyavan? Satya, one who holds truth within itself. But is caught in the grip of ignorance. That means all of us. So the love of Savitri and Satyavan is the love of the human soul and the Divine Mother. So this story will always remain contemporary. But we are caught up in ignorance. We don't know our own truth. We think I am Mr. So-and-so, Dr. So-and-so. But the day we realize we are a portion of the Divine Mother, then life begins to change. So this is the essence. So Satyavan. And then Dyumatsena, Satyavan's father, is the mind which has lost its vision. So our mind does not know what is going to happen. The next step in front. And of course, Ashwapati, Ashwa, that horse, always used for force, the force of tapasya, which helps one to ascend from plane to plane. And death, we have already, death and Narad, we have already been introduced. This is the framework. So Sri Aurobindo keeps the framework intact. But Ashupati's Yajna, he expands into three books. Yajna is not ceremonial sacrifice. Yajna is a process of inner purification through which consciousness ascends. It's no more gross. It becomes more and more refined. It becomes more and more subtle. Through that purification process, tapasya is concentrated energy of spiritual endeavor. So when we concentrate all our energy on a spiritual endeavor, that is tapasya. It has nothing to do with how you are sitting, what you are eating, not eating, and I mean all that is a package, but main thing is concentrated energy of spiritual endeavor. So when one is concentrated, what happens? So Ashupati's tapasya, all the possible experiences till now, in fact, I have said this and some people don't feel very happy about it, but I still must say, with all that I have read, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Gita, Book of Beginnings, Canto 3, Canto 4, you will get all the essence of the Vedas. If you don't want to understand what's there in the Veda, just read Book 1, Canto 3, The Secret Knowledge. What is Veda? It is knowledge. But what knowledge? Secret knowledge. You cannot know it by the mind, you cannot know it by the senses. Therefore, it is secret. So all the essential experiences, the soul within, the divine above, the, in fact, many things which are not there. For instance, the mystery of the avatar, why divine assumes Purusha, Prakriti, their oneness, what is the journey of life, what is rebirth, how we move through life, where is it leading, where is it going, all that is there. Book 1, Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. Everything that one wants to find in the Vedas, but in a very beautiful way. And more, I would say, because, you know, to navigate through all those hymns is not easy. But then in Canto 5, we started experiencing something which is not there in the Vedas, which is where we see that, so Veda is not a book which is written and finished. It is a book which continues to be written, because Veda is the secret knowledge. Can we say end of knowledge? It's a paradox, because it's infinite. This is there in Indian culture. We don't have one book written for all times forever. Sanatana Dharma doesn't talk like that. So Shri Krishna reveals something which is hinted in the Vedas, but he elaborates avatar, doctrine of avatar. So that's how our culture is not like finished in some BC when somebody wrote or experienced truths, that the end of the experience. No. The divine will keep on manifesting. New experiences are bound to arrive. So he experiences the descent. It's so beautifully described what the descent is, what it can do. This new thing, let me read. But before that, just a little passage from Secret Knowledge, which is so relevant to us. And everything, the two poles of existence, the one consciousness, and the gods, the titans, everything is there. How they act, why they act. And here is a passage to warm up our hearts. It's a prophecy Sri Aurobindo is making. So all those who believe that it's ultimately the book of the future, but just what's going to happen, what's going to happen. So there is all kinds of jnana coming from WhatsApp, from televisions, from news analysis. What is Sri Aurobindo's take on what's going to happen? He says, this is page 55, The Secret Knowledge. Thus will the masked transcendent mount his throne. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. As a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread. Again, I'm not entering into, you know, speaking about it, because it's so amazing that just few lines will take away the entire time, and we'll wait for the proper camp on Savitri. As a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread. Who will enter as a thief? God will enter as a thief. He has this penchant of doing it somehow. When we least suspect or expect, he enters. Where does he enter? He doesn't come with, you know, loud music and announcement, 1008 bar, Sri, 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 Bhagwan aa rahe hain. No. He is born in a prison. He doesn't care whether you know him or not. So the Redeemer, he is born in a manger. Look at it. So the Redeemer doesn't, because he knows who has to announce, somebody who doesn't know himself has to announce that, you know, some great Swamiji or Yogi is coming. Somebody who knows that he is divine doesn't need to announce. So he comes unannounced. And what does he do after coming? What does he steal? Thief has to steal. He steals our heart. But he does a heart transplant in its place. So what happens with this heart transplant? Of one who steps unseen into his house. It's his house, this body. A voice ill heard shall speak, the soul obey. He speaks to the soul. Mind is understand, doesn't understand, but something touches him from inside. That's how many of us suddenly have turned. Why we have turned? Why we have picked up? We don't know. There are many people who are far more capable in terms of achievements, outer power, intellectual, but he has picked up a voice ill heard. So Sri Aurobindo is ill heard. So we can understand that. But the soul listens. A power into mind's inner chamber steal, a charm and sweetness open, life's closed doors. Charm and sweetness. Several places Sri Aurobindo has described Krishna in a very interesting way without using the term. Krishna, literally one who draws us, akarshan, vikarshan, comes from that. He is the eternal charmer. Madhuram, madhuram, sweetness. And that's why he is shown in, born in a prison, because he is the immanent God in man. So he is always a child. Shown as a child, Laddu Gopal. He is enjoying. But he's a child. He grows. So a charm and sweetness. So from within, he will open the doors of life. He doesn't open from outside. He knows how we'll react. And beauty conquer the resisting world. Just imagine. The spirit of beauty. Beauty in action. Beauty in thought. Beauty in feelings. Beauty conquer the resisting world. And last four lines he says, a few shall see what none yet understands. God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep. For man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done. So he knows. Doesn't matter. Nobody will believe. There is supermind is going to manifest all this. People will think. They'll keep moving like that. You know, it's okay. People didn't believe that there is. During the life of Krishna, nobody except 3 or 4 felt that there is a divinity in him. With Rama, the same thing. With Christ, the same story. Very few who believed that there is divinity. So people are like that. We are blind. Doesn't matter. So this is the future. And then as I was saying, what is it that Sri Aurobindo discovers or experiences which changes? So he's seized with a new aspiration that this earth should become divine. It's described beautifully. A will, a hope immense now seized his heart. And to discern the superhuman's form, he raised his eyes to unseen spiritual heights. So all experiences of Ashupati are Sri Aurobindo's, and all experiences of Savitri and her yoga and the Divine Mother's experience. So what did he experience? It's beautifully described. So he ascends through the power of tapasya. His consciousness gets freed from the clutch of matter and this vision. So he begins to ascend. So as he is ascending with the aspiration that this world must become divine, it must manifest the veil divine. He has seen the divine is hidden inside this world. But why isn't he manifesting? So with this aspiration as he ascends, he experiences very, very powerful. As thus it rose, to meet him bare and pure, a strong descent leaped down. This is unique to Sri Aurobindo's yoga. a strong descent leap down through this, all the kundalini open from above downwards. So a strong descent leap down, a might, a flame, a beauty half visible with deathless eyes. Such a beauty you cannot behold. A violent ecstasy, a sweetness dire. At one stage, Sri Aurobindo was all about Krishna and Kali. They are two sides of one reality. Shyama and Shyama. How does he describe Kali? He doesn't use name because we immediately fix things in the head. Problem of human mind is we have fixed everything in the head. Crystallized. So he describes Kali as a violent ecstasy. Because he slays the ego and releases the soul and there is delight. And Sri Krishna is a sweetness, dire. That's what he did on Kurukshetra. And Arjuna asked him, who are you? Who are you? I have known you as a friend. I have walked with you, put my arms around you. But what you are saying now, I don't get a word of it. Who are you? And then he reveals himself and says, Kalosmi, I am time the destroyer. What are you trying to do here? He says, Loka Shekrita Pravraddhu. I am moved to destroy these peoples. And Arjuna is shaken to the core. What has happened to this Madhuram Madhuram? Sweetness, dire. So he describes, so as it comes, enveloped him with its stupendous limbs, and penetrated nerve and heart and brain that thrilled and fainted with the epiphany. His nature shuddered in the unknown's grasp. Now see these lines. In a moment, shorter than death, longer than time, by a power more ruthless than love, happier than heaven. See, love can be so ruthless. Love brooks no obstacle. It's the only force. It doesn't care about any obstacle. It will break down every barrier. It floods the whole being. It must reach its goal. So it's a power. He describes that ruthless. Your ego cannot stand before love. That's how poets have experienced aag ka darya hai aur dub ke jana hai. Love is not any joke. If you are willing to lose everything, then you are ready for love. So that power seizes him and he starts experiencing the transformation. And that's when we see Ashwapati says, no, I want for all. If it can happen in me, it can happen in everyone. Now, this is what happened in Sri Aurobindo's life physically, actually. That he was experiencing and then he wanted for all. And therefore people started gathering. Mother speaks of it that, you know, it's their life, biography, inner biography. That we had a choice whether we first go and transform ourselves or we take everybody together. And then she says the choice was spontaneous. So it's not like they calculated. They had to carry because had they gone themselves, they would have gone so far that there would have been no point of contact. So, now he wants for the earth. And then if he wants for earth, he has to explore what this earth is. And what marvelous discovery. Worlds within worlds and realms upon realms. Because all of that is there in earth. Earth is that which holds all the worlds together. So he discovers all the realms. Lok, Bhuvan. We have all these descriptions in Indian thought. Also we have Bible, for example, that my Lord has many mansions. We have forgotten all this because we are clamped up in the material world only. So he discovers worlds upon worlds upon worlds. Everywhere he is looking for that power which can help me and change earthly life. He goes to the high heavens. He descends into hell to see why, despite human beings wanting to change, why it doesn't change. So he enters into hell in the pit where we saw that he goes into that pit of falsehood. But that power still eludes. He climbs up, world soul. He goes to the core of creation as it is manifested. But that power has not manifested upon earth. That is the challenge. So, ultimately, we had read those, one of my most favorite lines, Vladimir has read, "One arm half parted the eternal's veil. A gesture came as of worlds thrown away." So Divine Mother on the threshold of the form and the formless as the world mother, but there is the beyond. She says, "You want to go? You can go. Otherwise, all the three worlds I can give you." And Ashwapati says, "No," he surrenders. So she lets him into the greater mystery beyond, where book 3 we see, first he has to encounter that absolute, bare, incommunicable, the one by whom we live, who lives by none, ekameva dvitiyam. It doesn't hear any prayer. There nothing survives there. Nothing, no thought, aspiration, feeling, everything vanishes. The world appears a dream, even the soul appears like a dream. But Ashwapati has that aspiration. He is able to keep that fire intact. And Nachiketa also wanted to know, and Yama says, "You can hold that fire?" Before that, for whom death is a spice and heroes and sages are a food in the banquet. But Ashwapati has the fire. So as he is wondering, because there is only a cancel. The vanity of the cosmic world is cancelled. It's the no. There is nothing like transformation, change. That alone is. We keep hearing, no? I am that and that alone is. And then suddenly, because he waits on the threshold, he says, "I am not going to merge. I want this secret." And then out of the heart of the ineffable, the inane, comes out the Divine Mother. So we have that in adoration of the Divine Mother, even as he stands on being's naked edge, where all is can vanish in the next moment, like Buddha on the threshold of Mahanirvana. And then the Divine Mother comes out, a form from beyond, grew conqueror here of death. And then he describes so beautifully, at the head she stands of birth and toil and fate. In their slow rounds the cycles turn to her call. Alone her hands can change time's dragon base. Hers is the mystery the night conceals. The spirit's alchemist energy is hers. She is the force, the inevitable word, the magnet of her difficult ascent, the sun from which we kindle all our suns. How beautifully she describes. All nature dumbly calls to her alone, to heal with her feet the aching throb of life and kindle her fire in the closed heart of things and break the seal on the dim, dumb soul of man and kindle her fire on the closed heart of things. Then he also sees what she can do. All here shall be one day her sweetness's home. All contraries prepare her harmony. Towards her our knowledge climbs, our passion gropes. In her miraculous rapture we shall dwell. Her clasp shall turn to ecstasy, our pain, ourselves shall be oneself with all through her. And then all of him is given to her. Only one desire is left, to embody more and more of that bliss. And he slays everything, tears away. He discovered that, you know, what is the problem? He says, we lose the one. All that denies must be torn out and slain and crush the many longings of the heart for which we lose the one for whom our lives were made. And then he seeks, and the Divine Mother, there is a little interchange. He says, I know my fire and sweetness are the cause of life, but too immense my danger and my joy. Man is too weak to bear the infinite's weight. Truth born too soon shall break the imperfect earth. O soul, you have what thou hast won is thine, but ask no more. Alone thou standest at the eternal doors. How shall you speak for men whose heart are dumb? Go and ask. She tells Ashwapati, you want transformation, ask what people want. They want a college degree. They want magic. They want money. Nobody wants. He said, no, mother, they are ignorant. If you leave it to them, they will never want. How many times pralaya will come? This was the thing that took place between mother and Sri Aurobindo. When mother comes, she has this inner something, that has the time come? And she says, Shobindo just said yes, and she saw the supermind descending like a massive cascade, but touches and goes back. So she tells him that, but man is not ready. And Shobindo says, if we leave it to man, man will never be ready. We have to make him ready. And we see this constantly in Mother's agenda later on. Every time Shobindo will say, not yet ready, world is not yet ready, not yet ready. So she is preparing it. So she says, world is not ready. Don't awake this descent because it will shatter all the measures. So instead he advises, you continue as a yogi, as a great yogi, as a mahayogi, as a maharishi and all that. Help mankind prepare, because all things shall change in God's transfiguring hour. Leave it. After 10,000 million years, earth will change because that is the original plan. Why are you in a hurry? And Ashwapati says, everything is possible if you intervene. There's such a marvelous line describing the Divine Mother. Just for a moment, I'll just read a little bit of that. So many places, there is this wonder of wonders. So he describes the Divine Mother. As he sees, he implores her on behalf of all of us. Ashwapati is like the divine advocate, advocating for us on behalf of us. What does he tell her? He is not expecting man. He knows. When somebody asks the mother, Mother, what can we expect from you? She says, everything. What do you expect from us? Nothing. He says, thankfully my work does not depend on man. Mother, but do you think humanity is fulfilling what it should do? She says, since I expect nothing, I can't answer this question. It is such an unconditional love. Yes, if we are not open, then we miss the bus. That's the story. If we are not open, we resist, we say, oh, then it's okay, I'll be in tamas. Fine. There are others who are open, who are ready to greet. So, he says, page 345, O truth defended in thy secret son. One would be reminded of the sloka from the Isha Upanishad. Hiranmayena patrena satyasyapihita mukham. It is literally, O truth whose face is covered with a golden lid. What is Sri Aurobindo writing? O truth defended in thy secret son, voice of her mighty musings in shut heavens. There are things which have not manifested. That's what he discovered, that within the world manifestation, it has not yet come, that power. That's why he goes beyond. Oh, wisdom, splendor, mother of the universe, creatrix, the eternals, artist, bride, all these terms we will find in the Vedas. In Rig Veda, 10th mandala, she is described as Brahmajaya, the eternal's artist bride. Linger not long with thy transmuting hand, pressed vainly on one golden bar of time, as if time dare not open its heart to God. And then see, O radiant fountain of the world's delight. World free and unattainable above. O bliss, who ever dwellest hid deep within, while men seek the outside and never find. So he says, you must come down. I have come so far, I am not going to go back asking for myself alone. This is the renunciation of Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo doesn't wear a langoti and walk into the forest. I have renounced my degree. I have renounced my family. If you still feel that was precious enough to be renounced, one is not even an adhikari for supramental yoga. It's because you renounce something which you feel is precious. What does he renounce? The realization within himself to hasten the collective realization upon earth. That's how the mother described 5th December. So he says, I am not going to go back. I have come here by the tapasya. I want you for this earth and men. And then she agrees. And what does she say? When will I come? She describes everything. And then she says, see, When did the mother come? When did the supramental manifestation take place? Dance of death. If you see the Second World War and its fumes, shows he describes a seed shall be sown in death's tremendous hour, a branch of heaven transplanted to human soil. Those who know the story of Krishna and Parijat, again, I'm not entering into it. Parijat is heavenly and brought down. It's a lovely story. Branch of heaven. That supramental bird is found only on the branches of heaven. It doesn't go anywhere because it stays where it descends. Mother's signature, she described it as the supramental bird. And then she says it stays where it descends. Can you imagine when we have something of a signed? So, a branch of heaven transplanted to human soil. Nature shall o'erleap her mortal step. Fate shall be changed by an unchanging will. So she comes. Then we see from here, from book 4 starts the mystery of the Divine Mother, and there is so much emphasis. Sometimes one wonders, like in Ramayana, you see the birth of Rama is described in such wonderful words. Bhai Prakat Kripala Deena Dayala Kaushalya Hitkari Harshit Mahitari Muni Manahari Adhavut Roop Nihari. He says the world is full of joy. Why? Because man does not know, but earth knows whose feet have touched. So Krishna is going on the Yamuna and Yamuna wants to touch him. And he thinks that, oh, it is going to drown him. But Yamuna knows, the material creation understands. For mother says, because mind brings a lot of blocks. She says, first to respond will be flowers, simple folks. So Yamuna wants to touch and his material father, his physical father is trying to lift it until it comes in spate and touches the feet. Then it begins to go down. So, Harshit Mahitari, Muni Manahari, Adhavut Rupniya, what a wonder of wonders has been born. So, there is a wonderful description. It gives us the secret of the avatar. Why divine has to assume a human body? Precisely because something cannot be done otherwise. All other magic can be done from there and through vibhutis and instruments. But avatar is when there has to be a direct action of on matter, on material nature. So, she takes a human body. And she brings a new epiphany with her, a new vision, a mind of light. So all that she embodies in the physical body. So by the very fact she is in the physical body, it will be done. At one place, the mother says, every time the avatar comes, he comes to transform matter. Even if nobody knows about him, still he'll do it. Why? Because matter is coming in contact with this new consciousness which she is embodying. But then obviously, if people become receptive, it's so much easier, better, smoother. So it presses upon matter. She's born in and matter begins to respond. There are so many stories of the mother. Once she wants to jump across a floor 15 feet. And she's doing all these experiments. So once her feet touches and then she goes across. So matter must become plastic. People who would have mother's darshan, they would suddenly see her body become tall. Much taller. Suddenly it will be radiant. All these people used to ask. Shurvindo, he says, yes, because a body is plastic. It doesn't operate like normal. And yet she takes upon our own challenges, difficulties, burden. So she comes and all that is described in book 4 and book 5, the magic of love. Now she must embody that power of love, finding of Satyavan. And Shurvindo describes what love is. He says, one thing alone which can bring hope to earth is love. Love, even when debased, disfigured, mocked by baser might, yet it is the power that can change. This is what I have often experienced when I have traveled to places. I shouldn't say this, but since I am sharing, I had been to Singapore and people, oh, so such lovely, clean and wonderful. And people asked me, what did you feel? I said, I'm in a dead city. Yeah. I said, why? I said, I just couldn't feel the energy of love. Everything else is there. Glitter is there. Glamour is there. All that people call as love. But there is no love. Everything else is there. Life has become so mechanical. Too perfect to embody love. Love doesn't care for the chains and the bonds and the limits. So you see this power of love, sometimes I feel it's a civilizational failure. People often ask me, I'm being very frank and honest, what is it, see, must have, today I want to rush back to India. But see, I feel that love every time I come out, the milkman and the lady who is making kolams, the worker, all the workers who are working there, they smile and they'll all ask, "Aya, how are you?" And they're everywhere, that thing I miss. I don't want to hear, "How are you? Okay, good, fine." I want to feel that heart. I mean, I'm just sharing, frankly. That energy of love that quickens everything, makes everything come alive, out of which the greatest sacrifices can be born and seem like nothing. That power of love. That's the civilizational failure. And the Divine Mother brings the vitamin L, as I keep saying. So she comes, embodies this love, and this love is in search of who is the ideal person. Very interesting discovery. She rejects the sages and saints. They are too much absorbed in their lonely meditation. "Ah, we have found Shivoham, Shivoham, Satchidanandoham." Okay, fine. I'm not looking for such a guy. The heroes and warriors. "Ah, my kingdom, my kingdom." No. The Divine Mother is looking for someone who wants this earth to be even as heavens, to join the two poles. That she finds in Satyavan. Satyavan says, very beautifully, he says, by the blessing of an adverse fate, he has come to the forest where he can be alone. He says, "I have found the self, but I want the self to connect with the world. But every time I find the world, I lose the self. Or if I am in the self, I lose the world." And then looking at Savitri, somewhere he feels, "But now thou hast come and all will surely change." So he gets that instant feeling that his quest will be fulfilled. His quest is to combine these two ends. Because he has suffered also. He has seen fate. So Savitri accepts and comes. So the Divine Mother comes to such a heart. She's not impressed by our show of spirituality. That how much he can meditate sitting bolt straight. And it doesn't impress her. She knows what's going on in the heart. So she takes Satyavan and then Book 6, all who want to understand what fate is, all this theory of karma and all this we carry in our head. I'll read one little passage. Several passages, but obviously we'll just read passages from, we are just dipping into Kshir Sagar, the ocean of milk, okay, knowledge and love. Page 458. See, whether we know the context or not, it doesn't matter. Of course, here the context is Narad is revealing all the secrets of fate. But even if we don't know what's happening, and if we read this passage, "O King," before that a line, "fate is truth working out in ignorance. The divine will takes into account all the resistance and works itself through. You can't eventually resist it. Ho hi hai so hi jo Ram rachi rakha, ko kari tark badhava isakha." You may calculate, you may doubt, you may do whatever you want. Divine will fulfills itself. So he says, "Fate is truth working out in ignorance. O King, thy fate is a transaction done." What is the law of karma? See, in several places he has revealed, "at every hour between nature and thy soul, with God for its foreseeing arbiter. Every little impulse, every little will, every little thought, every little inner gesture, feeling is seen by the divine. He is the sarvasakshi, suryo yatha, sarvalokasya chakshu." Nothing is missed out from him. So he has seen. Your nature has refused. Your soul wants the divine. Nature says, "I don't care." So he has seen. "At every hour, the transaction between soul and nature, with God as its forcing arbiter." Don't worry whether others have understood, not understood. Anyway, the world doesn't understand. The more you grow in consciousness, the less it will understand. So if you are not understood by people, you are on the right track. Okay? To say the least. Okay. Man can accept his fate, he can refuse. Huh? Is it? But then we see that life doesn't so easily. No, hold on. See the full truth. Man can accept his fate, he can refuse, even if the one maintains the unseen decree. Outwardly, nothing may change. Even if the one maintains the unseen decree, he writes thy refusal in thy credit page. We have an account. He did not succumb under the pressure of fate. He fought and struggled inside, even if he lost. That's why when people say it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. So true. Better to have lived and died than not lived at all. And I tell this advice to people who are going for exams. Better to face the exam and fail than run away from the exams. Because today or tomorrow you have to face different exams of life. So you see, he has written his your refusal. So what will I do with my refusal? There comes the continuity. For doom is not a close, a mystic seal. A good man dies unseen, mauled on the roads of destiny. Are he was such a good man. What's happened to him? Hold on. You think it is doom? It's not doom. What will happen? Arisen from the tragic crash of life. May not be in this body. But he has faced the challenge, wrestled with it. See, this was the original yoga in India. You wrestle with the forces. Don't run away. This is what Sri Krishna tells Arjuna. And what we have become. All these and people worship. I mean, strong views, of course. So, whenever every time people go to these world-shunning saints and get jnana, they don't have the jnana for what this world is. A man who has never married cannot guide you about, you know, what it means to be married. Quite naturally. See, Shurvinda and the mother, they were married, mother had child. They know everything about this life. I would never go to them if I heard. They, you know, he at 10 he went to Himalayas and he meditated for 20 years and had the jnana. I would never go to such a person. What does he understand of life? But when I hear he came to England and amidst all this darkness and the glitter and glamour, then yes, it makes sense. Here is someone with whom I can connect and relate to. So, arisen from the tragic crash of life. Arisen from the body's torture and death, the spirit rises mightier by defeat. Its godlike wings grow wider with each fall. We have so many stories in Indian thought. The mother once, there was a lady whom she had very special favors she would do. She was a bit uncouth and once Champaklalji asked mother, this girl, says, you know, she has suffered a lot in her previous life. She saw it, she knew it. So when we see these things happening, it's because you have paid the price. Sometimes in one life we just pay the price. In another life we get the returns. That's the whole process. But if we try to run away, change the path, I want an easy thing, I want a comfort zone, then it doesn't work. And there are so many stories like that. Story of Karna and so many in Indian. Shikhandi is the famous story in Mahabharata. She has paid the price. She wanted to kill Bhishma. She feels injustice has been done to her. And Shiva says that, well, whatever tapasya you may do, Bhishma is invincible. You can't beat him in this combat. So she says, okay. Keep my aspiration. I am going to burn in the fire. And she gives herself to fire and she dies. But she is born as a half woman. See? Story of transgender. So she is born as a half woman in the next life. Or a man with feminine features or a woman with masculine features. Whatever way. And now when the time comes, Bhishma says, I can't fight a woman. I can't die at the hands of a woman. This is dishonor. And he's in the war. He says, I can't fight him or her. He says, I bring somebody proper. But he has only let off this secret. He's a warrior. She has learned the, you know, art of war. It's not like she's just nobody. He's a good warrior. But no match to Bhishma. So, and Bhishma knows his time has come. And he has stood by the side of Adharma and he falls. So you see, arisen from the spirit rises mightier with each defeat. Its godlike wings grow wide with every fall. Its splendid failures sum to victory. O man, the events that made thee on thy road, though they smite thy body and soul with joy and grief, are not thy fate. They touch thee awhile and pass. Even death can cut not short thy spirit's walk. What is fate? Events are not the fate. Life and death are not fate. Then what is fate? Thy goal, the road thou choosest are thy fate. You choose the divine, that's your fate. As one place Shivabinda says, the spiritual destiny always stands. It may be delayed, but it's never lost. That's why one should choose the highest, the widest. Not instant success. Spirituality is not a McDonald's food. You have to pay a price. We may not be ready to pay the price of the ego, but at least we want that dish only. One day it will come. So this is how he describes. And now, after. So you see, there are many books within Savitri, many themes. Theme of love, theme of fate, theme of the divine avatar, theme of all the spiritual realizations, theme of the future. And then finally, in book 7, Savitri undertakes yoga. So here we see that Savitri, it's all about yoga that man must undertake. Though Savitri opens the path for us. And the challenges, and what happens? What happens when you find the soul? What happens when all this awakening of the Kundalini from above downwards in this yoga? Powerful description, beautiful description. What happens when the mother's presence awakens within you? What is nirvana? What is that state of complete self-annulment and a complete self-finding, if you want to put it? What happens when you identify with the entire creation, everything? All these experiences, no? Which are within our realm. We can have it if we walk the way. So book 7 is the yoga that Savitri undertakes. In the original story, she undertakes 3 nights and 3 days of Vrat. And people celebrate it now also. So they think by doing 3 days, 3 night fasting, well, as a memory, it's okay. But that's not what Savitri did. So she undertakes the real yoga. And that yoga which can conquer death, it is what that yoga is. It's summarized very beautifully in this book. It's a program that Savitri receives, and this program is something which, at least I should do it, I put it like the 18 chapters of the Gita, this is 18 lines, and I had taken a print out and put it everywhere on the door as a reminder. So, if you like, this is the whole program in short which is given, and then there is an elaboration. So this is what the yoga is given to Savitri. In 18 lines. Each line is climbing a mountain. Okay, but these are the steps of the journey. The voice replied. Her own higher self. The voice replied. Remember why thou camest. First step is to know who we are. Om krito smar kritam smar kritam krito smar kritam smar. Vayuranilamritam machedam bhasmantam shariram. Those who are conversant with the Upanishad, that don't be engaged with these things which are going to perish. Oh, will that which was done remember? Om krito smar kritam smar krito smar kritam smar. Remember why thou camest. Find out thy soul. So every day we should sit and seek the purpose of God within us. Find out thy soul. First step. Then only we can anything else. Find out thy soul, recover thy hid self. In silence, seek God's meaning in thy depths. Every day we should sit for a while. What is divine intention in me? Before we can decide the fate of the cosmos, you know, we are very busy with that. Oh, what's going to happen about Arab-Israel war? Is God doing something about the Hamas? Is God doing something about the Palestine issue? Is God, who will win, Israel or these? What nonsense. What am I here for? Like that man who prayed to God and suddenly God appeared and asked, what do you want? He says, peace in Arab and Israel. He says, my child, 4,000 years they've been fighting. I can't do it instantly. Ask something easier. He says, okay, me and my wife fight. Can you solve this issue? God says, okay, show me the map of Arab and Israel. I'll try to do something about that. So, you see, we want to solve the problem of human nature which we have created over centuries and millenniums. When people come to me and say, my wife fights, or vice versa, husband, he does this and that. Husband, don't fight. They do nasty things, okay? So, I tell them, which husband and which wife in the world have not done all this since times immemorial? You want him to be God and he wants you to be goddess. Find the God and goddess inside you first. Literally, when you want him to be Mr. Perfect, you want him to be God. Or when you want your wife to be, sometimes you know, like Sati Savitri. There is a joke about it, when somebody, one lady who had come to the ashram, and she told, she lives in ashram, very beautiful, pure soul. So she, pure soul is a way of expression, every soul is pure. So she tells Niruddha, she tells in Bengali, but I'll not repeat. He says, where is my Satyavan? So Niruddha, with his joking mood, says, I am your Satyavan. He said, this kind of Kala Kaluta Satyavan? This dark Satyavan? He says, as is the Savitri, so is the Satyavan. She was also. Dark. He says, you want that original Satyavan, but are you that original Savitri? So Jaisa Savitri is told by this lady also and confirmed. Ashram people are full of that joy and, you know, sense of humor. Used to look so serious. So he says, as is Savitri, so the Satyavan. You can't expect something more. So, but the first necessity is find, recover God's meaning. In silence, seek God's meaning in thy depths. We don't know why we are here. We want to solve the cosmic problem. Then mortal nature change to the divine. Until we have found the soul, until we are living by the soul, aligned with the soul, we can forget about transformation. Open God's door. Enter into his trance. Where is the door? We have so many doors of God, no? Guru Dwara, the door of the Guru. Temple door. This door, that door. But the door in the heart. Shivinda says, why is it in the heart? He says, God's last refuge from thoughts profaning touch. Nobody will seek him here. So he's saying, now I'm cushy. Otherwise, people go to God and ask 100 boons. Impossible boons. Impossible in the sense, imagine you have an examination where 100 people are appearing and all 100 ask God, I want to come first. Have a heart here. So, something that he has willed also, we should understand. So, what is his will in us? So, he says, open God's door. The door is inside, in the heart, in the cavern of the heart, and enter into his trance. This brings peace, silence, quietude. This is trance. Cast thought from thee, that nimble ape of light. All this analysis and seminars and this and that. Conferences on supermind. Thank God this is a retreat. Huh? And I take it as a yagya. That's how it should be. Debates and discussions on what happened on the 29th February. Are you don't know what happened when you were born. You're talking about 29th February. Sometimes you feel like saying, okay, nothing happened. Cool. What will you understand? What human language? Let it be uplifted to that point. Swami Vivekananda did this incidentally in Chicago when he was talking about his guru, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, to an audience who asked him, and he started speaking, and he was like that, you know. Ah, you know, he can create 1,000 Vivekanandas. And he saw people are puzzled, quizzed. Suddenly he stopped. You don't deserve to know about him, and walked away. This is documented. You don't deserve to know about him, walked away. So that, you know, when you have known that glory, so he says, cast thought from thee, that nimble ape of light. It's an ape, it tries to imitate. I know it, I know it, I know it. You don't know the I, forget about know it. My name is Benjamin Jowett. I am a graduate from Balliol College. All that is knowledge, I know it. And all that I do not know is not knowledge. That's doesn't work. So his vast, in his tremendous hush tilling thy brain. True knowledge comes when the brain becomes quiet. Then it pours like ocean. I think yesterday that passage, as when the mantra sings in yoga's ear, we had heard. His vast truth, wake within and know and see. Vast truth. It's not a narrow, dogmatic, religious sect. Vast truth. Cast from thee sense that veils thy spirit sight. All the time we are seeing things and reacting. In the enormous emptiness of thy mind, thou shalt see the Eternal's body in the world. Know him in every voice heard by thy soul. How beautiful this is. In the world's contacts, meet his single touch. All things shall fold thee into his embrace. Conquer thy heart's throbs. Let thy heart beat in God. So cardiologist can stay away. Solution. But if you believe in them, by all means. It's better to die in the arms of God, you know. As simple as that. Thy nature shall be the engine of his works. Thy voice shall house the mightiness of his word. Then shall thou harbor my force and conquer death. So this is a program. Savitri engages with this yoga. Book 7 is all about that. And then book 8, where there is death in the forest. So Satyavan dies. So the entire story up till now was flashback. Book 1, Canto 1 and 2 is just introducing us to the background. This day Satyavan will die. And Canto 2, Savitri is introduced. And book 1, Canto 3 onwards, Ashupati comes into the scene. Because Sri Aurobindo reveals to us why Savitri has come into being. So from book 1, Canto 3 onwards, a world's desire compelled a mortal birth. The anguish of the world, like Sita, was born because of the anguish of creation, because of Ravan. She comes, she's Bhumija, she is born into this soil, all the pain and the anguish. And then it continues and connects in book 8. This was the day when Satyavan must die. Now this is the day when Satyavan will die. So she is going out, takes leave from the parents. She knows she has not told this to anyone. She has not told this. You know what I am doing for him? Better note it. When you get the kingdom, know that it is me. That's but Savitri and Satyavan, mother and Sri Aurobindo, are the humblest of the humble. So they... She death comes, takes Satyavan, and then book 9 is all about Savitri's challenge with death. And in the very beginning, she reveals, she sees the secret, and she tells us what death is. Beautiful passage for us to remember. She knows the secret because she is already engaged in the yoga, and therefore we have these marvelous discoveries one after another. Okay. Just remember it, I can just. Okay, so she basically speaks of death and she describes. Other is the mystery of this darkness. So we look at it as the end of things. But Savitri says, death is a stride the soul must take. So it is it's like a stumbling stride the soul must take on its way towards immortality. So it's a passage through which we move. And as we move through this passage, every time we are reborn, we grow. So this is what death is about. So as she goes through this journey, there is the passage. Okay, I'll read it. All here is a, page 600 and 601. All here is a mystery of contraries, darkness a magic of self-hidden light. Suffering some secret rapture's tragic mask, and death an instrument of perpetual life. Although death walks beside us on life's road, a dim bystander at the body's start, and a last judgment on man's futile works, other is the riddle of its ambiguous face. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride the soul must take to cross from birth to birth. A great defeat, pregnant with victory, a whip to lash us towards our deathless state. And then such a beautiful line, always to remember, night is not our beginning, nor our end. She is the dark mother in whose womb we have hid, safe from too swift waking to world pain. We came to her from a supernal light. By light we live, and to the light we go. We are children of light. We are children of immortality. That's Sri Aurobindo's Upanishad. It closes like that. Amritasya putraha, anandasya putraha. We are the Adityas who sleeps within us. Children of light, children of immortality. And then death struggles. Death gives her this logic, that logic. She says, whatever it is, Satyavan cannot come back. This is the law. She says, well, it's an outdated law, literally. There is no law which can be greater than the divine grace. And so all happens, and he says, whatever it be, love is given to man only for one brief hour. He says, but my love is not a hunger of the... He says that, I know what your love is. It's a craving of the flesh, it's a hunger of the heart. Then he tries to console her, after 6 months, 1 year, you'll forget Satyavan, you'll find somebody else. Don't worry. He says, no, my love is not a hunger of the heart. My love is not a craving of the flesh. It comes to me from God to God returns. Now that is the love she's embodying. So he's never known. He says, whatever it be, even if that love is there, life on earth is doomed. There can be no transformation. So Savitri gives the logic. Several places we'll see Savitri gives the logic of transformation. On page 632, I'm just picking and choosing lines which I love, but each one will find their own. Page 632, she gives the logic of transformation. A mystic, slow transfiguration works. All our earth starts from mud and ends in sky. And love, see what a way he's describing love. The transmutations of love. This is the first energy that must be transformed. This is the power that will transform the inner consciousness. So when we love the divine, our human love begins to change into the divine love. And love that was once an animal's desire, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart. Everything Sri Aurobindo knows. Don't try to become a sadhu bachcha. No, I have nothing romantic about me. He knows. Sweet madness in the rapturous heart. An ardent comradeship in the happy mind becomes a wide spiritual yearning space, a lonely soul passions for the alone. The heart that loved man thrills to the love of God. A body is his chamber and his shrine. Then our body becomes the temple and the shrine of God. This is where the shrine has to be built first. Sri Ramakrishna told Sri Aurobindo, Mandir gado, mandir gado. This is the shrine. First, this is the center which must be built. Then is our being rescued from separateness. Love joins us with the divine and through the divine with all creation. All is itself, all is new felt in God. And then in the end she says, when unity is one, when strife is lost and all is known and all is classed by love, who shall turn back to ignorance and pain? My love eternal sits throned on God's calm. For love must soar beyond the very heavens and find its secret sense ineffable. It must change its human ways to ways divine. So that's why love has been suffered so much. And one of the things that is happening today, if I have to summarize, in the name of love, the destruction of all this beautiful power inside. And how Indian ancient Indian culture was built so much on this power of love. Sati was not a woman who burnt in fire, this is such a nonsensical, but she burnt in the inner fire of tapasya. It's not easy to love. She loved with such a one-pointedness that she could bring the husband back from death. She could stop the movement of the stars. That means the flow of time. That was the power of love. Not easy, because today what we understand by love is the most corrupted word. So she ultimately death last, she says, okay, I understand, I am, you know, you are someone, but knowledge alone cannot, I want to see what power is in you. You have the power, and then there is the description of the world mother revealing, the divine mother revealing all her effulgence and glory and greatness, and death is surrounded from all sides. This is the description incidentally in the Vedas, that there is Diti surrounded by Aditi. And that original truth, and death sees, my God, all around she seizes. And she starts licking up the thoughts, licking up the feelings. Everything that is filled with death, all that love was a burning torture in his body, limbs. Experience, the touch of the divine is felt like a torture. Some people can't stand it, they run away. Because it destroys. This is what is the action of when Mother Kali takes up. She changes everything, so it is felt. Death licked up his thoughts and ultimately tries to run back into the darkness, and nobody helps. Hell doesn't help, because now she is in all her effulgence and death dies. What it means is that its effort to forever make man captive of ignorance, that finishes. But that's not enough. Man has to lead a divine life. His body has to be transformed. It's not in the purview of death to give all that. Death releases Satyavan from its grip of ignorance. So now, one thing was ensured from that time onward, that man who aspires can discover the divine, the grip of ignorance will be lost. And that we see has been happening. But that project of Savitri, which we see in the far back Vedic time, now the Divine Mother completes it. And that's book 11. Sri Aurobindo stitches the story. So she meets, death releases Satyavan. But he says, I won't take him just like that. So she meets the Supreme and says, I want this for earth. He says, don't ask all this. What are you asking? Everything will change. The link will change. Again, man is not ready. She says, I have come thus far not to go back empty-handed. And finally, after all kinds of temptation, he gives her, be forever with your Satyavan in that highest state, forever. He says, no, Satyavan is not just for myself. We are together as force one to conquer this earth for the divine. This is the true meaning of this togetherness of a man and woman, ultimate. So then finally, he is compelled, he releases Satyavan, and then book 11 is the book of prophecy, where everything is described about the future. And supreme consummation, meaning thereby, this is our highest destiny if we choose it. And I'll just read last few lines. We are going to finish, another 10 minutes will take. So she asked these four boons, very powerful. I won't read it because they are very powerful. 696, 697. Those who want to read it later, the boon she asked for man and woman: thy peace, O Lord, a boon within to keep, amid the roar and ruin of wild time, for the magnificent soul of man on earth. Thy calm, O Lord, that bears thy hands of joy. Thy oneness, Lord, in many approaching hearts, my sweet infinity of thy numberless souls. Thy energy, Lord, to seize on woman and man, to take all things and creatures in their grief and gather them into a mother's arms. Thy embrace, which rends the living knot of pain. Thy joy, O Lord, in which all creatures breathe. Thy magic flowing waters of deep love. Thy sweetness give to me for earth and men. So that's the boon which is granted. So all that we want to know about the future, beyond what the media tells you, way beyond, and what beyond what human intellect can imagine, we'll find here. This is the prophecy. It's not Nostradamus seeing things from outside. Why this is not just a prophecy and promise? Because Sri Aurobindo and the mother have realized it for us. There is a difference. A prophet sees what somebody else, you know, future is going to happen. But when you are the future, that's why mother said Sri Aurobindo is the future advancing towards his own realization. Why? Because he realized and embodied it. So when he's saying it, he's not saying that I saw this is going to happen. He has secured it and secured it for us. And what that future is, in just a few lines, and then we will come to the close. How truth will be established and a new race will come. Page 708, book 11. And see, he knows that the world will not yield so easily. Even should a hostile force cling to its reign and claim its rights, perpetual sovereignty, and man refuse his high spiritual fate, yet shall the secret truth in things prevail. They made a foolproof plan. And then a few lines below. Even there shall come as a high crown of all the end of death, the death of ignorance. But first high truth must set her feet on earth. This is what is happening, the supramental. And all his and man aspire to the eternal light. And all his members feel the spirit's touch. And all his life obey an inner force. This too shall be, for a new life shall come. And truth shall be a sun on nature's head. And truth shall be the guide of nature's step. And truth shall gaze out of another deeps. When Superman is born as nature's king, his presence shall transfigure nature's world. So what is the solution? More and more human beings who enter into this state of spiritualization, Superman, they embody the Supermanhood and their presence will transfigure. That's what Sri Aurobindo is giving us. He shall light up truth's fire in nature's night. He shall lay upon the earth truth's greater law. Man too shall turn toward the spirit's call. When Superman is present, we'll see more and more human beings, men, automatically beginning to aspire. The spirit shall look out through matter's gaze, and matter shall reveal the spirit's face. The earth shall stir with impulses sublime, humanity awake to deepest self. So he continues and he speaks about the new race and all that is going to come is there in the book, and the path to realize it, how we can receive it, and that thing is revealed to Savitri. So this was connecting Savitri with the mother's story here. So she has realized this possibility in a Satyavan, but as a result it can be realized by others. Now that project, far back in Vedic times, as the story goes, must be finally realized in its fulfillment. And the mother says, Savitri is a partial incarnation, but she speaks of herself as the full manifestation of the Divine Mother. And so now this project comes to its logical conclusion, to its definitive end. And so she secures the boon and comes back to earth. And beautiful lines, so lovely, so sweet, so humanly divine. And I am just not entering into it because I wouldn't know where to stop. But in book 12, we see the secret that is revealed. And with that, we'll stop. Page 723. Now, Satyavan has come back to life as the story goes. And Savitri and Satyavan. Meanwhile, it is late evening. The whole story is of 18 hours. This was the day when Satyavan must die. VRs. Evening. Same day. So Dyumatsena has got his sight, got the kingdom because Savitri has asked these boons. Now they are looking for Satyavan. And they don't know. Where is he? He used to come back so early. So as they see them, Dyumatsena tells Savitri, why didn't you bring him back? You know that I can't taste food without him. How much, you know, today is the day when everything joyous has happened and Satyavan is missing. So it's such a human touch you will see and connect, relate with it. And Savitri is not saying anything, though he's asking Savitri. But Satyavan comes and says, lay all on her. She is the cause of all. Yes, Dad. She is the reason why I got delayed. But then he describes that whole thing. She says that, lay all on her. She is the cause of all. With her enchantment, she has twined me round. Behold, at noon, leaving this house of clay. He says, I not only left the house there, I left this house of clay. Dad, you don't know what has happened. Okay, leaving this house of clay, I wandered in far off eternities, yet still a captive in her golden hands. But you know, wherever I went, her love was carrying me. This is what we should be. And there is nothing to fear then. And then he says that finally I have come back. Then all the sages have come with the king. And they look at Savitri and see something has happened to her. There is a glow on her face. And this is how they ask. What gleaming marvel of the earth or skies stands silently by human Satyavan to mark a brilliance in the dusk of eve? They observe it. But you see, he keeps true to the Indian culture. They don't ask, Savitri, what's happened to you? So you see how they're asking. Satyavan, what is this gleaming marvel standing by your side? This is not the Savitri we know. Suddenly there is a transformation in her because she has shown her fullness, the Vishwaroop and beyond. And then they say, if this is she of whom the world has heard, wonder no more at any happy change, each easy miracle of felicity of her transmuting heart, the alchemy is. They feel inwardly, if this is by the side of Satyavan, everything is possible. Faith moves them. But one of them asks, ultimately, he asks, then one spoke there, who seemed a priest and sage. Oh, woman's soul, what light, what power revealed, working the rapid marvels of the day, opens for us by the happier age. He says, you tell me something, you reveal. What is the secret? What has happened today? So much has happened and now you are standing effulgent. We can't understand anything. I think you know the secret. Give us the secret. And then you will see how perfect, even as a poetic description, this book is. So, now Shobhita is not just saying, and Savitri said. Normally we will say, no, and Savitri said. Look how he's describing. He describes. Her lashes fluttering upwards gathered in to a vision which had scanned immortal things. She was looking down. She didn't want to, you know, show off. Suddenly she looks up fluttering and she looks so, all that has happened, she scans and keeps it in the eye. But she's not going to tell all this. That scanned immortal things. Rejoicing human forms for their delight, they claimed for their deep childlike motherhood the life of all these souls to be her life. Then she looks at everybody and says, oh, now I have to be, because she realized that highest, everything has happened. She says, I have to be like a mother to them, spiritual motherhood. Looks at her. They don't know. They will call her whatever they want to. But she has taken charge of them. And then see again the perfection of description. Then, falling veiled the light, low she replied. Those who know don't shout and announce. Falling low the lids. Then she replies. What does she say? What is the essence of Savitri? The message of Savitri? The gist of Savitri? Awakened to the meaning of my heart, that to feel love and oneness is to live. And this, the magic of our golden change, is all the truth I know or seek, O sage. Awakened to the meaning of my heart, that to feel love and oneness is to live. How many of us are alive? And this the meaning. And this the magic of our golden change. This the magic. Love is the magic. And this the magic of our golden change is all the truth I know or seek, O sage. And the two lines which follow, with which we'll close. See, there's a lot of humor in Savitri. I have deliberately not touched so many places. And very subtle. Here you will see, now she has revealed this truth to the sage. Now sages, how they are responding. So you see what they say. Because they would have expected, she would have said, I did Raj Yoga and I conquered this, you know. Nothing. She just said, awaken to the meaning of my heart, that to feel love and oneness is to live. Wondering at her and her two luminous words. They're wondering, what has she said? They can't understand. Two luminous words. Wondering at her and her two luminous words, westward they turned in the fast gathering night. And as far as Savitri is concerned, she brooded through her stillness on a thought, deep guarded by her mystic folds of light, and in her bosom nursed a greater dawn. So this is Savitri and so much more. And I think we are right on time. I saw the time was 11. So it's 11. Thank you so much. It's just one would want to drown into it and be lost in it.